All right, let's get into it. Is the detective who helped nail O.J. Simpson also the bloke who nearly blew the whole bloody case to pieces? Meet Mark Furman. I'm Vixie Steele, British-American troublemaker, high-volume truth machine. Today I'm stuck between disbelief and intrigue, because this story is a head-on collision of police work, race, media, and a courtroom circus that never packed up its tent. Look, Mark Furman was not born a tabloid headline. Born in Washington State in 1952, he was a Marine by 18, a machine gunner and military police. Then he joined the LAPD in 1975, 2 decades in the grinder. By 1989, he's a detective, regular patrols to major crime scenes. That's the straight line. Then the curveball, June 1994, Brentwood. Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman murdered. Detectives swarm. Furman's among the first into the heat, and he spots blood on and in OJ's white Bronco at Rockingham, climbs a wall, gets the gate open under exigent circumstances, and later he finds the right-hand bloody glove on Simpson's property. The left-hand glove is at the crime scene. DNA ties the victim's blood to the glove. On paper, that's case-cracking evidence.
But mate, this isn't just paper. It's people, perception, and a courtroom with TV cameras jammed down its throat.
By 1995, under oath, F. Lee Bailey asks Furman if he used a specific racial slur in the last 10 years. Furman says no, and that lie detonates the prosecution. Because tapes exist. Dozens of uses of that slur on interviews he did from 1985 to the mid-90s with a screenwriter. The jury only hears a couple of tame excerpts. The worst violence chatter is kept out by Judge Lance Ito as too prejudicial. But the damage is done. In a country still raw from Rodney King, a largely black jury watches the state's key detective torpedo his own credibility. Johnny Cochran doesn't need new forensics. He just needs doubt. Furman later pleads no contest to perjury in 1996 for that denial. 3 years probation and a $200 fine. Wrap your head around this. He becomes the only person criminally convicted in connection with the Simpson case, and it's for lying about a slur, not evidence handling. He apologizes on TV, calls the tape language immature and money-chasing, says it was for a failed screenplay. An LAPD review later says he grossly exaggerated those tales of beatings and brutality. Some minority colleagues even speak up that they never knew him to be racist on the job. All that nuance lands like a feather in a hurricane. The brand was set. Furman equals the state's Achilles heel.
Important threads to know. In 1985, Furman answered a domestic violence call at Nicole's place and confronted OJ swinging a bat at a car. He says he offered Nicole the chance to press charges. In 1989, his statement plays into OJ's arrest for spousal abuse. Fast forward to June 1994. Officer Robert Risk notes a single bloody left glove at the murder scene. At least 14 cops and supervisors see just one glove there. Hours later, Furman finds the right glove at Rockingham. Cato Kalin told detectives he heard thumps by the wall earlier that night. The chain seems tight. Yet by trial time, the story's not the DNA, it's the detective's mouth. And when asked, outside the jury's presence, whether he planted or manufactured evidence, he takes the fifth. Legally smart, optically disastrous. So, the big nasty question. Did Mark Furman plant that glove? To be fair, the defence pushed that narrative hard, and it was their job to. But here's where my bullshit meter starts pegging. Number one, there's no direct proof of planting. None. Number two, you'd need a conspiracy threading multiple scenes, officers, supervisors, and chains of custody without a single person cracking. Vincent Bugliosi, yes, the Manson prosecutor, argued that under California's Penal Code Article 128, fabricating evidence in a death-eligible case could itself be death-eligible. You'd be risking your badge and your life to pull this off. Number three, the timing, the locations, the observation that only one glove was at the crime scene, all make a secret swap look like Mission Impossible Brentwood edition. And still, in court, the image of OJ trying on those gloves and them appearing too small just steamrolled the lab work. Theatre beats science every damn time. Listen, I'm not here to polish Furman's halo.
He lied under oath about ugly language. He fed the defence exactly what they needed. But I'm also not buying a Marvel villain frame-up with 10 cops in on it and no leaks for 30 years. Meanwhile, the same guy moves to Sandpoint, Idaho after retiring in 1995, writes bestsellers like Murder in Brentwood and Murder in Greenwich, becomes a Fox News crime scene analyst, even hosts Spokane radio shows. And a curveball for your hot takes, in late 1994, he worked to exonerate a black suspect, Arik Harris, who he thought was falsely implicated. People are messier than your favourite meme. Sometimes hypocrisy, sometimes complexity.
And because life is sick with irony, the tapes that wrecked him came from a screenwriting project about female cops. He expected to get paid if it got made. Instead, it made him the prosecution's ticking time bomb. That's society for you.
Quick sidebar. Tapes and bad timing give me PTSD. Years ago, I'm queuing up a chart topper on live radio. I fat finger the cart. Instead of the single, I blast my own garage band's demo. Off key, off tempo, off brand, straight to air. Management storms in like the thought police. I'm sweating bullets, thinking I've torched my career. But you know what? The switchboard lights up. Listeners loved the chaos. Taught me this. An unexpected tape can flip the room in seconds. Now imagine that times 100 in a trial watched by the world, and the tape isn't a dodgy riff. It's you saying vile things. Game over, mate.
Moving on before I break something. The legacy. Furman's the cautionary tale for cops and prosecutors. Don't build your case atop a witness with a credibility landmine. Or if you must, for the love of sanity, don't ask the one question that lets the defence nuke you from orbit. Alan Dershowitz later said he wouldn't have put him on the stand. Respect where it's due, that's the call. Because once you make it about the cop and not the corpus, the jury stops hearing the blood, the timeline, the DNA. All they hear is trust or don't.
Final beat. Furman always denied planting evidence. He apologised for the language. Some former co-workers defended him. An internal review said his taped war stories were puffed up. He wrote books, did TV, lived out in Idaho, collected war memorabilia, and in 2026 he died of throat cancer at 74. The debate about him did not die. It won't. Because the real story isn't just one detective. It's how a system lets a single credibility explosion drown out a mountain of forensic work. And it's how media turns a murder case into a metadrama with a villain, a glove, and a catchphrase. Do I think he planted the glove? No. Do I think his ego and his mouth helped sink the state's ship? Absolutely. And if you disagree, comment and bring receipts. But if your theory requires a death penalty eligible conspiracy with zero paper trail, yeah, no, I'm calling it. Fucking hell, can someone explain why this bullshit is allowed to run courts like a theatre stage? I shouldn't have to say this, but here we fucking are. That's today's dose of reality. I'm Vixie Steele, and this was Truth Amplified. Come back tomorrow. We'll kick over another rotten log and see what crawls out.